Hi, today is January 13th, 2019. I knew it was going to happen sometime soon. And this is Mobius Podcast 283, and we're kind of going to talk about CES 2019. But I want to start off with a happy anniversary. It's been 1 year since we in Hawaii had our memorable Hawaii Missile Crisis at 8:07 a.m. January 13, 2018. And that was 2018. And that was an interesting 20-some-odd minutes. Any rate, so it was a year ago. I'm not sure how to help. Oh, Google wanted to say something. I don't know if you heard
Google's
that.
Google's trying to be helpful. Yeah, I did hear Google.
Yeah. So a year ago, lots of fun. I almost sent you an email canceling the podcast for the next day since it was a Saturday morning. And I thought, you know what? If something happens, John will figure it out.
Yeah. If it was truly that Hawaii had disappeared, I probably would assume our podcast was canceled.
Yeah, right? I mean, that makes sense. So I said,
so would our 5 or 6 listeners.
Yeah. And so I figured, I got 20-some-odd minutes to go. Actually, 15 minutes to go, I think, at that point. Because we figure, it takes a few minutes. If it's real, it takes a few minutes for them to set off the alert. And then it takes a missile 20 minutes to get from there to here. So I figured, 15 minutes. John figured I'll do other stuff in that 15 minutes. I had one friend who I think I mentioned was on the golf course with some friends, and he got a call from his daughter and said, "Hey, Dad, this, that, and other thing." He goes, it's a nice day. I'll play through.
Yeah. Might not keep as much score as I was. I might not care too much to record it, but I'll play through.
Yeah. But at any rate, I'm not sure what happened since then. I mean, there's a lot, some personnel changes over there at the emergency management folks, and but I don't know, I think I heard they got rid of the system that was one of the major factors in the error going out. But yeah, it was an interesting time, where technology didn't exactly fail us, but didn't exactly help either. Mm-hmm. Where we had alerts on our smartphones, and all of mine went off at the same time, even the ones that don't have cell service, because as emergency notifications go out on a cell phone even if you're if you don't have cell service on it. And 911 calling also works.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. Oh, the TV. I turned on the TV. TV wasn't on. So I turned on the TV, see what was going on. And a crawler on the bottom was saying the same thing. But there was no sirens. So I was really confused, But I figured, we'll figure out what happens in the next 15 minutes. And I did go to look for my eclipse glasses. Because I figured if we're going to go, I want to not go blind instantly. And I want to see what's happening.
Yeah.
That's practical, I think. I got to go look for my eclipse glasses again now that I think about it. I can't remember where I put them now. I did find them at the time, which was kind of amazing. Anyway.
Well, the eclipse had just happened 6 months earlier, so.
Yeah. Although, I don't think we saw it in Hawaii. It was really north, like in the northwest, and then with a path going towards the southeast, I think. So we weren't anywhere in the path. Okay.
And if you are feeling like we're not being if we're being vague on this, no, missiles did not hit Hawaii.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You just woke up from a coma and you're thinking, wait a minute.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Didn't happen. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So there you go. All right. Next up, CES was this past week. I can't say I followed it closely, but I did keep my eye out in the news. Before we start talking about CES and its, various winners and things, I want to remind folks that one of the things I find most amusing about all of these places, all of these, not conferences, what do you call them? Shows, right? Conferences where you go to talk to other experts and potentially learn stuff and share information. This is a product show. And so they have winners and, well, not losers, but they have winners of various categories. And I just want to remind people that those things are useless. let's go back to 2009. Where the best of CES was, drum roll, the Palm Pre.
Palm Pre. Everyone remembers how successful the Palm Pre was.
Yep. So the iPhone was, 2 years old at the time? And Android was 1 year old at the time? And, should have been a contender maybe. But no, the Palm Pre won best of CES. Not just a category, the whole thing. It was the best product, period. In CES.
And you know what? From a technological standpoint, the Palm Pre wasn't that bad.
No.
It just didn't take off and was not really priced appropriately and marketed appropriately.
And one could say the same thing for our, you know, our favorite former operating system, Windows Mobile. Or Windows Phone, I guess, Windows Phone. You could say all the same things for that. It was a wonderful operating system, just wasn't presented properly and was somewhat hampered by restrictions in its design. Not that it's design restricted, but I think John and I both believe Microsoft restricted certain functionality to reduce its competition with, you know, laptops, for example. Because at the time, you know, these devices had keyboards and stuff. They were great.
Oh, yeah. I often think about that. In fact, I was showing off a picture of the HTC Universal.
Oh, yeah.
To a friend of mine this last week. And she was too young to really remember smartphones before the iPhone.
Right.
And when I said, you know, this was my phone in 2005 and 2006, and, you know, it had this clamshell that could both open and swivel.
Yep.
She was very shocked because, you know, it was A, a brick, which it was, but B, it could basically, at the time, it was the closest thing we had to running your whole world. I often joke about, there's a Jimmy Buffett song called One Particular Harbor, where there's a lyric that says, I used to rule my world from a payphone. And today you will not find payphones, but it is almost possible to rule your world from a cell phone today.
Yep.
To not have to use a computer or a tablet to be able to do all of your banking, do all of your other miscellaneous personal interactions with the world through a cell phone.
Yeah, very true. Very true. I was going to say it was either... Oh, gosh. Was it Isaac Asimov or Arthur C. Clarke that had a story that was very similar to what we have? But anyway, science fiction aside. But yeah, the Palm Pre. And the winner of the computer and hardware category, by the way, was actually a very nice product. I wanted one, but I just couldn't afford it. And that was the Sony Vaio P-Series, lifestyle PC. And the Sony Vaios were always very nice, just way out of my price range, as is many things. Still. So for folks who are interested in that, I'll put in our show notes, I'll put a link to the 2009 category winners. And I should note, I didn't just pick 2009 because, you know, it was the Palm Pre was winner that year. I just picked it because it was 10 years ago. I took a look at some other winners and they're equally silly and, you know, not winners in the sense of marketplace and market share and mind share. So, and for those, you know, the fives of you who are Palm Pre fans, sorry, but it doesn't exist anymore, does it? Just like Windows Mobile and Windows Phone that John and I really liked at the time. Were we still using? Yeah, I was still using Windows Phone at the time. I think I used it up until 2011.
I had just, if I remember right, switched over to Android as my daily driver in 2009. But I was still heavily involved in Windows Phone. And I hadn't obviously written the books on Windows Phone, or the book of Windows Phone that I did write, that was 2010. So,
Now, the one thing that was announced at CES that I am interested in is the Lenovo Smart Clock, which is based on Google Assistant. Now, I've become a real fan of the Lenovo Smart Display. I have the 10-inch version that has Google Assistant built in. And it's become a... You know, part of my daily routine to check things, check the news in the morning. And I should know, because it has a screen, I can say, you know, show the news. And I've got it set up so that the video news fires up first in that queue. And I can, you know, actually take a look at the news as I'm wandering around and doing things. So, looking forward to the Lenovo Smart Clock, which has a display. Google Assistant fired up on my smart display. Thought I was asking about it. I wonder if it knows about it. Hey, Google, what is the Lenovo Smart Clock?
Here's a summary from the website Mashable.com. Lenovo's Smart Alarm Clock asks you to wake up with Google. The clock is small, with a 4-inch touchscreen display. Behind the display is a fabric-covered 6-watt speaker, volume buttons, and a USB port to charge your phone.
And there you go. That's what the Smart Clock is.
Very good.
Yep.
Thank you, Google.
Yep. So I'm looking forward to this. You know, I think it's not too expensive. I think it's in the $70 range. And I wonder if it's battery backed up. I didn't read, you know, the reviews in detail, but I wonder if it's battery backed up. So if your power fails, it at least still sets the alarm off, even though the, you know, internet features are not available. because, you know, the Echo and the smart display are kind of useless without connectivity. And not just power outages, but if you have power, but, you know, if your broadband fails for whatever reason. Did you find anything interesting announced during
CES? Thought it was very interesting that that Apple has announced partnerships with smart TV manufacturers to bring AirPlay 2. So my house, as I've mentioned, I have a Sonos system, so it's an older version. None of my Sonos speakers are AirPlay 2 compatible, although Sonos at least will let me. I can, if I have one speaker in the system that's AirPlay 2, I can group it with other speakers and use it for AirPlay, that sort of thing. So eventually I probably will get a couple of AirPlay 2 Sonos speakers in. But the idea of a smart TV with AirPlay 2, obviously right now if you have an Apple TV, you can get AirPlay 2 through it.
Right.
But what makes me intrigued is that smart TVs, in my experience, have been relatively underpowered.
Hmm.
And I guess it probably doesn't take that much processing power to process an audio stream, but will it be a good experience? And you know how Apple can be very guarded on experiences. You know, you get their experience or you don't get anything. So I will be interested to see how those smart TVs, once they come to market, how they work and if they're well designed. And as I mentioned to you before we started the podcast, I will probably be needing to buy a TV this year. For my living room TV's power inverter has been dying for the last year, basically, and now it takes a good 5 minutes to turn on my TV. So I'm pretty sure one day it's just not going to turn on, and I'm hoping that the smart TVs with AirPlay 2 are available, because I'd like to pick one up if, you know, it's the same price, just to try it out.
You know, I've never owned a smart TV. The last TV I bought, which was about 2 years ago, I purposely bought one with a nice, you know, nice screen. It looks really good, but it wasn't smart because I figured, why do I need to have a smart TV when I have a Roku? Or at the time, I think I had an Apple TV, second generation Apple TV, which is now dead. But I just couldn't see the rationale for a smart TV, and that thought or that opinion is based on. At my former job, which was like 3-4 years ago, we did have some smart TVs in the office. And I played with them a little to configure them and such. And I found them to be incredibly stupid. the user interface in particular were brain dead. So I'm really wondering, you know, how Apple's going. You know, Apple, you know, prides itself on user interface. And not everybody agrees they're great, but they are easy to use in general. Unlike the smart TVs I saw, which were hideous, had the hideous user interface and user experience.
Yeah, that's exactly my opinion on smart TVs. I've yet to find one where the interface is great and that the functionality is good, or that it's even supported 3 or 4 years after you buy it.
Yeah.
So my parents have a smart TV that they purchased in 2012 or 13, and the app stopped updating about 3 years ago, and you can't get new apps for it. And, of course, you can't connect any service that has upgraded their API.
Right.
So the apps that are on it don't even work anymore. So they have a Roku that does everything they need it to do. And, you know, it was cheap enough that when that Roku dies eventually, they can just buy another Roku.
Yeah. You can get a decent Roku.
So, yeah, it's a very interesting.
Way under 100.
It's a very interesting sort of world with smart TVs. And if you're like me and you only own one television, it's even more of a kind of a moot point. And I've often thought about when this TV goes, since I have a surround sound speaker system in the room, if I could just buy a large monitor, it might actually be the same effect. Because I don't really need, you know, or, you know, a dumb TV would do the same thing. But I guess it's probably pretty hard to find a decent 60-inch monitor and or a 60-inch non-smart TV.
Right, right. And you know, and the TV is one of those pieces of tech that I rarely replace. I would say I buy, unless something breaks prematurely, I probably don't replace a TV more than once a decade.
My, growing up, the same TV that my parents bought in 1985 was the same TV that they were using up until 2005. and the same thing, they bought two TVs, one at one house in 85, the other, so same TV.
Yeah.
One house, they replaced it with a big TV in 2005, the other house, we just for because we could, we upgraded in, I think, 2004. And then in 2014, they bought another one. I've had the same TV since 2009. And the only reason I'm thinking of upgrading is because the power inverter isn't turning on in a timely fashion. Right. And it's annoying to wait 5 minutes to turn on your TV.
Of course. And, you know, a 10-year-old TV, you probably feel like you got your money's worth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, right? We don't feel bad about it. It's not like when we have to, well, back, not so much anymore, but back in the days when we had to upgrade our PCs every time there was a new Windows release because the new version of Windows was too much for the previous generation of PCs. That hasn't been true in a while, I understand. I mean, since Windows 7, Windows has been pretty resource friendly and seems to run. Well, Windows 8 was a hog, but Windows 7 and 10.
And on the same point, I'm pretty surprised that I'm very happy still with my 2015 MacBook Pro. And that I really, you know, I was thinking with Windows PCs, I was upgrading every couple of years in the 2000s because you're right. New version of Windows, you needed a new PC.
Yep.
Macs, I was upgrading on like a 3-year cycle because I had Apple Care Plus for 3 years. And then if it was my primary computer, I was leery to use it without having someone to just send it off to and say, fix this when it broke.
Right.
But now my Apple Care Plus has been expired on my 2015 MacBook Pro for a year almost, and it seems to be working just fine. And I'm thinking I might not upgrade until 2021, 2022. So it's interesting how things we once thought were replace every couple of years are getting longer and longer, which of course goes in the face of most of the conspiracy theorists that say, you know, technology is lasting not as long as it used to.
Yeah. And you're speaking to a guy using a 2013 MacBook Air, by the way. So,
yep.
You know, I'm thinking, wow, you've got a new Mac.
My office computer. So I was taking my Surface Pro between the two offices I have at work. And then about a week and a half ago, I realized, you know, I've got this 2011 MacBook Pro or MacBook Air that I'm not using. Why don't I just set that up in one of my offices and leave it there? And so I took my MacBook Air, set it up, put it in that office, and I've been very happy back to not having to carry the Mac or carry a computer. Now I just carry my iPad Pro between two offices instead of the iPad Pro plus the Surface Pro.
Hey, before I forget, I wanted to mention that I wrote a little thing on that I posted to my ElgasoWars.com, which is really, really medium.com, about the Google Canvas web drawing app. I think I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago. So I actually tried to draw a bit with it last night, and I posted some thoughts on it over to ElgasoWalrus.com. So I'll put that in the show notes. But so what does it mean to have AirPlay come to smart TVs? Basically, all it means is you don't need Apple TV, right?
Yeah, if you're just going to use it as a output for AirPlay audio.
Yeah. So it's AirPlay audio only? You can't send a TV show from your phone?
That's a good question. I don't know if it'll support video or just audio.
Right. Because that would be ideal.
I assume it will support video as well.
Yeah.
But let's also remember that, it just says AirPlay 2 speaker.
Oh.
So you can send any different types of audio
to your TV.
And of course, we know that TVs usually have abysmal audio,
right.
You know, speakers. So this is really if you have your TV connected up to your home surround sound.
Right. Or you have a sound bar or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get nice your audio bar through that.
Which I don't. You know, I think I didn't know what a sound bar was until a couple of years ago. People, what's a sound bar? Is that like a Nestle's Crunch bar? I mean, you know, not a clue.
It's a place you go to listen to sounds,
I guess,
with other people.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
But, I thought, wow, I guess so. TV speakers are terrible, and if you don't want good sound, you got to go buy something like this. But anyway, I was really confused at the time because it seemed like, well, why don't you just throw it through your stereo system if you really want a good sound? But then I thought, well, you know, stereo systems are kind of annoying to set up for people. So, yeah, the soundbar thing seems like a good idea, although I thought the speaker separation was way too narrow, but that's just me.
I'm also adding something, since you added something to our show notes midway through.
Okay.
Something we haven't talked about because it happened while we were on a little bit of a hiatus. I don't know if you talked about it on the secret show that you did without me.
Mm-hmm.
There are more rumors about an iPad Mini 5. Have you been seeing these floating around here and there?
I have not. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I did see something about iPad Mini 5, but it didn't. None of the rumors mentioned the one thing I really care about. That's Apple Pencil support. So I stopped reading.
Well, yes, you're not going to get Apple Pencil support, I don't think.
Yeah.
But it is at least interesting that there is a renewed rumor mill about it. So if it doesn't have Apple Pencil support, are you a hard out on it?
No, I'm not a hard out on it. I think, you know, I still use an Apple iPad Mini 4 as my daily thing to carry with me. I don't necessarily use it every day, but I do carry it with me. And during a meeting when I'm too lazy to carry my Surface Pro 4, or in fact, I should note, a couple of weeks ago, my Surface Pro 4's battery got the swollen battery thing and could no longer be charged. So I couldn't carry it. So I had to use my iPad Mini as my, you know, go to meeting and take notes kind of device. I'm looking up here. So the iPad Mini 4 is released September 9th, 2015. So it's coming up on 4 years old now.
Yes.
It'll be in September anyway. So it's like 4 1/3 years old now. So yeah, it'd be great to see iPad Mini 5. I really hope. I know you don't think it's going to happen. I have to say I agree with you. But I really hope that there is some kind of Apple Pencil support. That would make my life so much nicer to be able to.
Well, and I have been, now that I have my iPad Pro that I just bought,
yeah,
the new Apple Pencil and all that, I don't think I would pick up an iPad Mini unless it had Apple Pencil support.
Yeah.
And even then, I mean, I have an iPad Pro that's got plenty of space, the screen's very nice, and I'm paying for cellular on it, so I really don't see me going back to a Mini. But I did like the iPad Mini form factor, and actually really liked it for portable use with people at things like recruiting events.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of, you know, put your name and number in on this iPad. And, you know, I think the iPad Mini actually has a very good market in terms of devices in retail and commercial spaces.
Yeah.
But you don't, you just don't see people, probably wouldn't be enough to support it as a platform, but hopefully Apple will refresh it and not just kill it completely.
Yeah, actually, and you know, my fondness for the iPad Mini is probably in the minority. Well, obviously in the minority since it hasn't been updated in over 4 years. But I like it because I don't have to carry a full-size bag to tote it around with me everywhere going. And I literally take it everywhere I go. I mean, you know, I have a little bag with it in it, even if I'm at the movies and I know I'm not going to use it. But it's in there. You know, I just leave it in there. It doesn't go anywhere. So my, you know, my man bag has iPad Mini 4. It's not very big, really. It's not very big at all.
Yeah, I have a jacket right now that has a pocket just big enough for the iPad Pro, and so I carry it around in that. But I have thought about picking up a little man bag that's just big enough for the iPad Pro.
Yeah. Yeah, so, well, I'm going to go on record saying if it comes out and it's significantly faster, you know, it has a modern chipset in it, even if it doesn't have a Apple Pencil support, I will probably buy it. Oh, speaking of iPads, I should mention, you know, I've been ranting about my terrible experience with Apple's iPad Pro 9.7 smart keyboard, you know, using a smart connector. Recently, and I've cleaned the connectors a couple times, but it frequently, like daily, says, this device is not recognized or something like that. So it's, when did it come out? 2016? 2017? 2017, I think. I bought it, so it's not really 2 years old yet, maybe 2.5. But at any rate, at a relatively young age, the keyboard is, you know, the $170 keyboard is actually useless, which is kind of annoying. Have not had good luck with Apple Smart Keyboard. We'll never buy one again. Let's see. Okay, and the last thing is something you wanted to mention.
Yeah, this is just sort of a little reflection.
Mm-hmm.
So back in the 2000s, the good old 2000 aughts, whatever, you had a lot of small websites that were enthusiast websites that built up a user community. So before the big social networks, you would have niche little communities that were what you could consider Web 1.0. And one of those I use regularly, and it's called Ravelry.com.
Mm-hmm.
It is a website for people who knit or crochet or do anything with yarn. And it's got a giant database of patterns and everything else and forums. And it's a little mini social network that was built before the major ones. Its origin story is sort of like all of those Web 1.0s were. It was a wife that wanted a way to track certain things about her yarn collection, and mm-hmm. her husband was a coder, and he built the website for her. And it's just sort of built in, and they've kept it to be kind of a small business now. They make some ad revenue and this and that to keep it running. Mm-hmm. But it never got bought up like many of the other niche communities by a large name and turned into a full-on commercial thing. So it's sort of, on that point, I think it's interesting to reflect on how the web used to be, and if you're interested in what the world was like when you had these highly niche communities and their own little networks, then you can head over to Ravelry and create an account and browse around. But the other thing is that they have also resisted having a dedicated mobile app. They have mobile-optimized pages. Their mm-hmm. website is fairly usable on a smartphone. It's not perfect, and some of the pages are more mobile-optimized than others. They have an API, so third-party developers can register and build an app if they want to, but they have not built an official mobile app, which is, again, sort of a thing that was a Web 1.0 idea, that you don't need a dedicated app if you have very well-designed web pages that also occasionally do mobile-optimized. So I think that's also something that we've forgotten about. Today, when you go to a website and it doesn't work well on mobile, you just go, well, they have an app, so I wouldn't ever use the website, I'd use the app. But it was a lot nicer of a world when people focused on building web pages that worked well on the small screen versus the large screen.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because I was just looking at my phone as you were talking about that to say, I don't think I download mobile apps from not so much community sites, but at least news-ish sites. Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking about, you know, everything is mobile app. You're right? So a lot of news sites, both tech and general news, have apps that you can download, and I resist downloading them because they're so huge. I've got 256 gigabytes of storage. There's really, these days, storage isn't an issue, but being old school, I still think about, you know, why do I need to download a multi-megabyte, probably tens of megabytes app for something that I can just type in, you know, whatever the news source is, and it looks reasonably fine. And if it doesn't look reasonably fine, to address your second point, I figure, you know, people who can't design a website probably can't design an app either. So I'm just going to stop using them as a source of news altogether, because they're obviously, you know, useless.
Well, and I started teaching again this semester, this week, our semester started, and one of the classes I'm teaching is human factors engineering. Mm. And, of course, this is a highly applied class. It's taught mostly case study. I don't do a lot of lecture in it. And one of the things that one of my students said to me this week was, well, you know, I brought up something about UI design or website design. And they're like, well, isn't the engineer an engineer that does that? And I said, yeah, but have you ever met an engineer? Like, if they're a software engineer, if they're a coder, they don't think anything about UI. And if they're a graphic designer, they don't think anything about functionality.
No.
You need to have someone who can see the big picture and say, you know, UI team, you need to provide this, and design, you know, programming team, you need to provide that.
Yeah.
And if people sort of take for granted these things.
If your students don't understand that, go to archive.org and show them ICQ.com.
they will have an assignment later this semester to look at bad web design.
Yeah.
There's a book that came out in the late 90s called Web Pages That Suck.
I kind of remember that.
Their website is actually still around. The blog hasn't been updated in a couple of years.
Yeah.
But the website is still around, and they've got stuff as recent as 2016, 2014 or so. So I still bring that up, and I still show those things to my students. But it is a very interesting class, and they're just very shocked that the answers aren't always textbook answers, that sometimes the real world is not as clean as they would think it should be.
Which reminds me, you know, can I find it now? And not to denigrate Jacob Nielsen, but my recollection is, so Jacob Nielsen is like renowned for his design and web usability and design and all that. But, you know, and I think his website's offline now. But he used to have this website that had absolutely no design, and I felt it. I found it just incredibly amusing. But you know, I've come to appreciate it over the years, because as everything tries to look like Pinterest or Instagram or something, and I just want to see the news, you know?
Yeah. I agree. And another, since we're talking about my human factors class, another life piece of advice that I can close with that my students gave this week. We were talking about an aerospace incident, and it focused around NASA, and one of my students goes, but, you know, this was NASA. And I said, do you think that because it's NASA, they wouldn't make mistakes?
Yeah.
And that the people working there wouldn't fall victim to the same thing? And so it sort of cracked me up, because he was very much of the mindset that if it's a company I've heard of or a government agency, they should be perfect. And it's only, you know, Billy Bob's crop dusters that I should worry about the aerospace industry. And good reminder that just because it's a company you've heard of doesn't mean it's all the people there are very smart and will not make any mistakes.
Right. It's one of those fallacies of assumed expertise, right? Where
you
make these naive assumptions about people and things and entities, and it's usually not true.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. So somehow John and I have once again managed to fill up about a half an hour of chatting with not a whole heck of a lot to chat about. And in fact, a good chunk of it was talking about a 2009 product. So,
yes.
It was a slow week, is what we're saying. And we'll see what happens in the coming weeks. I'm not sure there's any new news that I'm expecting. I'm trying to think through this now. Let's see, if Apple's going to announce an iPad Mini 5, it's not even going to be this year, is it? I mean, this part of the year, it'd be more like fall?
I would think it could be as soon as March.
You think so?
March or April. That's about when Apple does a spring announcement, usually every year.
The iPad Pro was announced around that time frame, I think. Well, the iPad was, in fact, was announced in January.
Occasionally, they get crazy and they do a hardware announcement around WWDC.
Yeah.
But I think if they're going to do, I think they'll probably do a spring hardware announcement this year, especially if now that AirPower is supposedly in production. Yeah. Yeah, that's another rumor that came out this week. So if that's true, I think definitely they're going to want to get to a spring hardware announcement, maybe early spring, because they're, of course, AirPower is the first product in many years to miss its delivery date.
Yeah, it's become Apple's Dukem Nukem whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Sequel. But, okay, so somehow, as I said, John and I have meandered through a half an hour or so of not a whole heck of a lot, but we enjoy it anyway.
We are just wonderful pontificators and experts, and so we can talk for a half hour.
Okay. Thanks as usual, John, and we will talk to you next time.